Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We hit the field light. Ooh. All day light. Ooh. All night light. Here we go. Here we go.
Ah. Keep it on. Keep it on. Keep it on.
We got rhythm light.
This is the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast with James Rapine and Daryl Ryder on 92.3thefan.com.
What up and welcome into another edition of the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast. I'm James Rapine along with Daryl Ryder. We are your beat writers for 92.3 The Fan and 92.3thefan.com. It's great to be with you. It's been a while, Daryl. It's only our second podcast in the month of May because our schedules... There's just been so much going on, but we're happy to be back. Daryl, how are you? It's been a while since I've seen you in person.
Yeah, you know, between your home stands and your bachelor parties, you just don't have any time for me anymore. I don't know what's up with that.
That's
it's
right.
Like you're avoiding me or
I'm
something.
I'm avoiding you. Yeah, there's conflict in the room. There's issues. There's issues. I wonder if the Lakers could solve our issues. Probably not. Probably make them worse.
Not if Jeannie Buss is involved or Magic Johnson or Rob Pelinka.
Yeah, I'm Rob Pelinka. You're Magic.
Or the Rambis family.
Yeah.
What a bleep
that's right.
Show.
No, you're Kurt Rambis. Anyways, real quick, before we dive into bachelor party talk, we got some Browns talk on the way. We'll talk about the Indians. Are they done? Should they sell the farm and sell everyone? We'll get into all that on today's podcast, but a quick reminder, subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts, including the radio.com app and our website, 92.3thefan.com. All right, Daryl, let's dive into it. There's something you really, really wanted to get into that isn't sports related, so we can start with that. We can get it out of the way. Go.
First question, does your fiance listen to this podcast?
No.
Okay, so we're in the clear. All right, so... How was the bachelor party?
I'm just kidding. Everyone listens to this podcast, and you should, too. Go ahead.
How was the bachelor party?
It was great.
I mean, I'm glad to see you survive.
I survived. I'm glad I wasn't recording this on, like, Sunday morning or Monday morning, because my voice, little raspy, little rough. It's tough to wake up.
Was it hangover-esque?
Very much so. No tigers.
No tigers?
No tigers, but to say
monkeys?
Actually, no. Was there a monkey in Hangover 2 or something?
I'm just throwing out random animals.
No real animals or anything, but there were times when I woke up and I was like, oh, where are my teeth? So I got my teeth fixed since then.
How many stripper poles did you swing from?
Seven.
Seven?
Seven of
Only
them.
Seven?
I'm an underrated dancer.
How was Candy?
I'll say that.
Was she good?
I think most people think that it would look at me and be like, oh, he can't dance. Underrated in the dance department.
Okay.
Not that I'm good, but I'm underrated. My looks are deceiving.
So you're going to be fine during the wedding?
I think so, yeah. You got to have a little rhythm.
God forbid I ever get married, I do have to take dance lessons.
Really?
Yeah, I'm man enough to admit that.
And I'm not a good dancer, but it's enough to get by.
I might be the most uncoordinated human on the planet. I'm not joking. All right, so candy, sugar, cinnamon, all good?
Yeah, oh, candy was the best, though.
Candy was the
Come
best?
Come on now.
All right, yep. You tip sugar, well, right?
Sugar is the other one?
I don't know. I'm just making
I was
up.
On, so I, we
I'm
were
just
on
making
a cruise
up stripper
ship.
Names
we were
at this
on,
point.
Yeah, we were on a
did
cruise
Did you get
ship.
Names and numbers while you were there?
No.
Where did you go,
what?
By the way?
Why would I do that?
I don't know.
To use them? What? I wouldn't get numbers to use. Anyways, went to the Bahamas.
Okay.
So the way it worked is...
That's a hell of a bachelor party in the Bahamas, man.
Three-day cruise.
You're supposed to go to the Bahamas for the honeymoon, bro.
We'll go somewhere nicer for the honeymoon.
Where are you going for the honeymoon?
I don't know yet, but it'll be somewhere nice.
Wait, very nice. Wedding's coming up, isn't it?
Yeah, honeymoon isn't until August, because the way the Indian season is and the All-Star game and stuff,
yeah,
we're pushing it.
August is going to be here before you know it. You might want to figure
Start
out...
Start booking... So a lot we got to figure out, Daryl. Stop making a panic. Yeah, I hope my fiance isn't listening to this because she's probably going to be like, oh my God, we do. No, we'll figure it out. So anyways, yeah, it was a good time. So the guys went on a three-day cruise
okay.
to the Bahamas. The women went on a four-day cruise, and we met up in the Bahamas because we had the same stop. We're on different ships, same stop, went for a bar crawl. It was a really good time. Saturday afternoon bar crawl.
That's interesting.
At the beach. Yeah, it was great. Because we're really close friends. Emily and I have been dating for a long, long time. So we have a lot of the same mutual friends. So why not party together? Makes sense. So it was a blast.
Nice. Congratulations.
A drunken good time.
I'm glad that A, you made it back. B, they let you back into the country. And C, that you're sitting here doing another podcast finally.
I was worried about that because it was Monday morning. It's like 8 a.m. and I'm going through customs and I'm like, they're going to smell the liquor on me and like have to pat me down, check my bag. And I literally had nothing in my bag besides the clothes that I brought on the ship. But man.
James, do you have anything to declare?
And they asked that and I was like, nope, I have one shot glass. And it was... I literally had one shot glass.
A souvenir shot glass from the Bahamas?
Yeah, just to have one. Remember the trip by. That's it. That's all I needed. All
right.
And it was filled when I bought it. It came with liquor, otherwise I would have no interest. This wasn't no gift shop shot glass. This is one of those that came filled with the product.
Oh, gotcha.
And you throw it back and you're like, oh, a souvenir.
So you no souvenir booze brought home or anything like
that? Well, no, I didn't check a bag.
Okay.
So... I didn't check a bag on the plane, so I just brought a carry-on.
Nice.
Very minimal stuff.
It's the way to travel.
It was a good trip.
I never checked bags.
Yeah, because you don't have to wait
either.
On your bag. You know, I love the airport, and I think the airports get a bad rap because the fact that I was, you know, in the middle of the ocean one morning and 6 hours later I'm back in Ohio, like that's, and that includes the drive to the airport and getting off the ship and all this stuff. You know, like it's very quick how we travel, but waiting on your bag, that is the one thing.
Were you mixing your cocktails with Dramamine?
No, I didn't take any Dramamine. You ever been on a cruise?
Never been on a cruise. Been on a few boats, though.
Yeah, there are times, like yesterday was my first day. Yesterday was my first day back, and I still felt like I was on the boat. Like I was still trying to balance myself. So my equilibrium was a little messed up, I'd say.
I'm going to help you out.
Uh-oh.
Take your lovely lady for dinner on the Good Time.
The Good Time?
It's like a little mini dinner cruise here in Cleveland. But yeah, look it up. Good time.
Good food?
Don't do it. Yes, but don't do it in the middle of winter.
Well,
bad idea.
That's fair.
I remember this was about, oh man, what is this, 2019? This is about, I don't know, like 14, 15 years ago. The company I was working for, we had a holiday party on the Good Time. And I was like really stoked because it was my first time on the Good Time.
I'm about to have a good time on the Good Time.
Right. So... let's just put it this way. Dinner ended up on it got a little choppy, ran into a little chop on Lake Erie.
That's
coming
rough.
Out of the Cuyahoga River.
Especially if you're having a couple drinks.
Yeah, not
maybe
a
some
good,
seafood. Yeah, that's a little rough.
Not a good time in the middle of winter. So, but pick a nice summer evening.
Okay.
There you go. Take her for a dinner cruise on the Good Time.
I'm in. And I can surprise her since she's...
there you go.
She's not hearing this part.
Exactly. See, you know what? I'm here to help. It's what I do.
It's what he does. He's Dale Ryder, our Browns beat reporter. We'll dive into some Browns. We're going to get into some Browns here.
Is there stuff going on with the Browns?
A little Baker Mayfield. Is Gerald McCoy necessary? We're going to do that. But
Odell
first,
Beckham's
we,
custom
we
rules,
have to
Royce.
Start, and this is rare for the podcast, but we're going to start with the Tribe. And it's the team that I've been covering, and then I go out of town, and all hell breaks loose, and you're speaking of a ship, it sounds like they're a sinking ship suddenly. They lose 7 of 8. I was only a part of 3 of those losses, by the way. Before yesterday's comeback win in the 9th, it was over. I had the article written, they fall to 26-28, and then they score 5 runs in a season-saving victory. Daryl, is that true?
Right.
Is it fair to say?
No.
Is it fair to say that saves the season?
No.
No?
Oh, my God. Prisoner of the moment.
It was a huge win, though. 27-27 now.
I'm going to be honest. Was laying in bed, watching the game. I think I passed out in, the 7th inning.
It was boring, so that's fair.
That's why I passed out in the 7th inning. And I never go to bed before midnight. Like, I never am out before midnight.
Okay.
I'm usually up till 1, 2, and I usually can't fall asleep. That's my problem. I have many problems, but that's one of many.
Yeah, lack of dance moves, sleeping.
But I woke up this morning, I pull up my Twitter feed, and I'm like, holy crap, the Indians won last night. How the hell that happened? Look, they scored more runs in the 9th inning than they've scored in 75% of their games this year. Good for them. I'm not hating on them. Just the reality is they played like crap for the last couple of weeks. They look like they're dead. Nice to see them show a sign of life and a pulse, but I'm not going to say it's going to save the season. I want to see how they respond and if they can string some games together. I really think, though, that they're about to be stuck in baseball purgatory. They're not going anywhere. They're going to be around 500. I don't think that they're a below 500 team, but I think that they're going to be around 500, and 500 doesn't get you anywhere. So they're going to have to sell at the trade deadline, and the player that probably they should sell first is most likely Trevor Bauer, and see if you can maybe get one or two top tier ready to play in August, September this year, ready for opening day next year level prospects, and see if maybe you can hit the ground running in 2020. So I know that there's people talking about like full-blown rebuild, blow it up, trade everybody, go through that 5-year process, which, by the way, you don't want to do that. I think that they've got a few pieces that they might be able to move, but I don't think they're going anywhere this year. I think that they're fooling themselves. Just being in that clubhouse while you were gone,
oh, watching, don't you dare.
Watching
being in the clubhouse while I was gone. You were there for 2 days?
Watching Terry Francona's body language.
What?
You don't understand.
Two days!
You don't understand. Oh, long before you came, I used to cover all three teams in town.
Here we go.
At
here
the same time, okay? I covered the Manny Acta years. I covered the grinded out Eric Wedgie years, okay?
Here we go.
I remember Charlie Manuel.
Harold's old. This is you. All right.
I am.
I'm old, but, and back in my day, when I was in the locker room every day.
I'm just telling you, it was a very, it just wasn't an uplifting feeling. And I understand part of that was because they were in that funk, losing 7 of 8 and whatever, but I did not get a good positive vibe. Like, this team believes in itself, or this team has that peace.
You were there Thursday, Friday, right? Those are your days?
I was.
So they had just lost 5 straight.
No, you're wrong. They lost 4 straight because the first night I was there, they won on a swinging infield single dribbler up the third baseline.
On Thursday they won?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm getting my days confused. Okay.
Then they lost the following night.
Okay. But yeah.
I just, you can, trust me, you can feel when there's something special around a team. You can feel that. And I never got that.
Well, you're not going to get that when they're
struggling. You can. Because there's teams.
Man, how many winning teams have you covered outside of LeBron James? Three.
I covered a lot of winning Indians teams. I covered the 2007 Indians.
It's a long time ago.
I understand
it's a long time
ago,
Daryl.
But it doesn't change. It doesn't change. My point is, James, they don't have that player. Like, Francisco Lindor is a transcendent player. I believe that. But I don't think that he is the X factor that makes it go. I don't think he's like the heartbeat of the team, if that makes sense.
Well, he can't be because he's the only one really hitting consistently right now, and outside of Carlos Santana and in baseball.
But you understand what I'm getting at.
Yeah, all right. So
they're missing that portion.
I don't think
aside from guys that could actually play the sport of baseball.
I don't think they're missing that player.
I think
they have that player.
They're missing like 6 effing guys in the lineup too. If they can swap out about 6 of their guys in the lineup, they'll be in great shape.
I think they have that player, and he's not playing well, at least. Jose Ramirez. I think if Jose, you can roll your eyes all you want, third in AL MVP voting back-to-back seasons. Jose Ramirez is legit.
Jose Ramirez should retire the way he's been playing.
And if before the season...
And I know
season,
I say that knowing he reached base, what, 4 or 5 times last night? Four. He still should retire. Yeah. He sucks!
All right, so...
He used to be good. That was a long time ago.
It was 8 months ago.
8 months is a long time.
Okay, fine. 9 months ago. Jeez, it has been a while. Anyway.
That's a kid ago.
You need to stop having so many kids. All right, let's talk about the Indians and really that you know of and look at this team objectively.
I am looking at it objectively.
No, objectively. No, you're not.
I'm not saying the sky's falling. I said that they're a 500 team, which means you're basically stuck you're stuck on the cruise ship in the middle of the ocean going nowhere. You ain't going to the Bahamas. You're headed for the Bermuda Triangle.
The cruise ship. All right. If you would have told me at the beginning of the year, Mike Clevinger is going to miss significant time.
Please tell me how great this situation is.
Jose Ramirez is going to be slightly over 200 after a great night.
Oh, wait a minute. He's off the interstate?
He's over 200.
On.
Yeah, correct. So your second best player struggles.
Golf clap for Jose Ramirez finally off the interstate. Took until May.
Lindor isn't going to be And he's still not 100% with that ankle, yeah, and missed a couple of weeks to start the season.
By the way, he's your only All-Star.
You're going to have to play. That's not true. Brad Hand is. You're going to have to play a lot of unknown commodities in the middle infield to start the year, and then in the outfield as you try to sort through things. If you're going to Carlos Gonzalez, that experiment's going to fail. Hanley Ramirez, that experience is going to fail.
He's gone.
I'm talking at the beginning of the year. If you tell me all of those things happen, I would have been shocked that they're 500. So, yes, it's easy to be like, oh, my God, they've lost. It's 7 out of 9 now. They've lost 7 out of 9. There's no way they make a run. But as much as that has to do with the Indians and how rough it's been and the run differential and how ugly it's been, they're still 27-27. Part of this and why it's so tough now is because the Minnesota Twins are the best team in baseball. The Minnesota Twins have the most home runs in baseball. The Minnesota Twins look like a legitimate World Series contender, which is insane, and no one thought that coming into the season. Some thought maybe they'd win the division. I thought they'd win 80-plus games and be a legitimate contender in the Central.
They're running away with it now.
But as of now, they're running away with it. So they've outperformed every projection. No one. I don't even think the guys in Minnesota thought that they would be as good as they've been. So that's part of it as well. So Indians injuries, obviously their offseason moves, some of them haven't worked out. There are some things that we can get into that I think can change their fortune, at least a little bit on the roster, and things Terry Francona could do, even though I think blaming him is silly because he's working with a lot of nothing or young guys or guys like Cargo who just can't play anymore.
You know, the vibe I got from Tito, by the way? The vibe I got from him as he was answering questions was like, well, what the F do you want me to do?
Sure. And he probably feels that way right now. He's frustrated. To me, though, this team, as bad as it feels, look at it, take a step back, which isn't your job as a fan, by the way.
By the way,
it's our job.
I am taking a step back.
Take a step back and look at things objectively.
They're going nowhere.
I don't give a damn who they would have kept in the offseason, by the way. If you'd have told me the Twins had the best record in the league, they wouldn't have been able to do anything anyways. All right, so that's part of it too. But here's what I will say is they have been willing to try things. They have promoted Oscar Mercado. People got mad that Jordan Luplo got promoted, and he definitely deserves to be up here and has proven to be one of their better power bats in the lineup. They have some pieces. You just gotta see. They can't sell tomorrow. Let's wait to see. Let's get into the summer.
You sell in July.
I agree with you, though, that Trevor Bauer, especially yesterday with the way we saw Zach Plesac, you're going to have Shane Bieber, Carlos Carrasco. Corey Kluber will be coming back later this year. Obviously, Mike Clevinger, much closer to returning, going to have a rehab start hopefully later this week. All of those things that happen, your rotation's still pretty good. Like, this isn't a tear it down. For the Indians fans that want to tear it down and rebuild, I saw that in Cincinnati. Reds fans are excited today. They're still in last place in the Central. And I know it's a much, much tougher division in the National League. A tear down and rebuild is so difficult. So selling on the fly like the Indians did and are going to continue to do, I think, while also trying to win, it's very hard. In the winning, it might be 500 this year. That's very realistic, and I think even if it's not 500, it might be 84 wins. You know, it might be in that range where that's not getting you in the playoffs. It's just not.
The way I look at it is you got 320 games left to Francisco Lindor before you have to think about trading him. That's that, you know, halfway through his final year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as long as you have him and you have this pitching, you at least have foundation pieces that you can build upon. So I'm with you. I don't think that completely blowing it up and tearing it down is the right way to go. I think that you jettison some of these pieces this year, try and shed a little payroll, because you're basically wasting money this year. They wasted $120 million on a team that can't hit worth you know what. They wasted $120 million on a team that can't win consistently. You spend $120 million and you're the Cleveland Indians, you need to be winning your division by 10 games. Like, that's just the economic reality of the franchise. And I'm not making excuses for them. That's just the cold, hard math and reality. They have, you know.
Not many teams win their division by 10 games.
I understand.
So I disagree with that.
But, you know, getting
I think we're spoiled in the Central.
Getting Kipnis off the books this year is going to be critical, because that is $15 million that they could have desperately used elsewhere.
Sure.
That contract was a disaster.
They were never able to get hit. They couldn't unload him, though, or they would have.
I understand. I understand his value is the dirt on the bottom of my shoe right now.
I bet you won't say it to his face.
But they can't.
Go ahead. Keep going.
But they have so much dead money tied up, and they're a franchise that can't afford to have dead money tied up in their payroll. That's the reality. Because, you know, I get people complaining about them chopping the $25 million off the payroll this year and letting Brantley walk and go to Houston. Listen, they were not going to pay Michael Brantley. I think the Astros paid him like $38 million 30. Over to...
15 over, million.
15 a year? Okay.
Why? Why wouldn't they?
Because of the injury history. Very, very, very...
I totally get it.
Because where the Indians are... Again, I'm not making excuses for them. I'm saying that I can understand why they did some of the things that they did, because I'm being fair and objective, as you like to say, about the situation.
Sure.
That doesn't mean that I agree with it or that I'm happy with it or that it hasn't come back to bite them in the ass. But, you know...
Here's the problem, though.
The reality is there's only so much money that they can spend, okay?
Sure.
And they've spent it. You know, people are acting like $120 million is like they've got the lowest payroll in baseball. And that's just, it's so beyond inaccurate. Last year they spent $150 plus million. So quick math, 120 and 150 is 270. They've spent north of $270 million over the last 2 years combined on their payroll. And what they're going to have to show for it is one division title, a sweep in the DS, and a .500 baseball team. And to me, that is on the front office for how they allocated the dollars. Now, nobody was bitching and complaining when Kipnis signed the extension, because Kipnis was an all-star at the time of the extension. He fell off the face of the earth, just like Jose Ramirez has fallen off the face of the earth.
I think Jose Ramirez can still turn it around, though.
You think so?
I'm not throwing dirt on that casket. Here's
one nugget that I picked up at the ballpark over the weekend. There are not many people that believe Jose Ramirez is ever going to turn it around.
I disagree with you. In fact, I've talked to people down there that know why he's struggling. And it's just a matter of him fixing it.
There's a hope. There's a difference between hope and belief. They hope he turns it around, but do they really believe that he's going to turn it around? They have to believe he's going to turn it around. But I'm telling you, there is pessimism around Jose Ramirez right now.
The problem is it's a lot of mechanical things, and I think that pitchers and opposing teams now know where to pitch him.
Throw him off speed.
It's outside.
Can't hit the curve.
Don't throw it inside.
He's got Pedro Serrano disease.
And so...
Oh, nothing on the...
No, I just blow by it. To me...
Straight ball I hit very far. Curveball. Bat's afraid.
I think if...
By the way, worst Serrano
probably
impersonation ever.
I think if this Indians club this year is going to turn it around, and I still think there is that chance. I haven't ruled that out, because we're so quick in this Twitter world to overreact to
you're ready to have a parade after they came back last night.
I wasn't ready to have a parade. It was a hell of a win, season-saving victory
for the Indians last night.
Well, if losing over the weekend and losing 7 of 8 was season-ending, then a win like that can be season-saving. You know, the way we like to overreact in this Twitter sphere world, if Jose Ramirez can turn it around. And I know that's a big if, especially with what we've seen.
That is the largest if ever, but continue.
And by turn it around, I mean hit with more power and up his average by 70 points. Like, it's not like I'm saying hit 400 from here on out.
Yeah, no, it's unrealistic.
So then I really do. I think that they have a shot, because I think Jordan Luplo, Oscar Mercado, I think they're legit. Carlos Santana, while his average might decline some, he's a legit bat. Francisco Lindor as well.
Yep.
And here's the other thing. And the thing I wanted to get into, and the one thing I think Terry Francona needs to seriously consider, and I get you don't want to disrupt Carlos Santana. At the same time, the front office went out and got Jake Bowers for a reason. Everyone keeps crushing Jake Bowers. Since he's been to Cleveland, he's had to do things he's never done, or have done very, very fill-in bases, essentially. He played 20 games in the outfield last year for Tampa Bay. He's primarily an outfielder / DH for this Indian squad. He's not comfortable there. I could say that confidently. I could say it's probably bothering a 23-year-old who's used to playing first base. It's made it hard on him, because now it's just more things to do. It makes it tough. I think
the Indians
had
a DH the other night in a game who didn't have a batting average.
They need to put him at first base, and they need to put Carlos Santana at
DH.
And for most of the game, it doesn't have to be every game, 80% of the time. Santana's a really good first baseman. I get guess what? Bowers is the future. So if you want to get the most out of him now, you put him in a place he's comfortable. You wouldn't want the Browns to put Baker Mayfield this year in an uncomfortable spot. No, you'd want to set him up for success. So guess what they did? They went out and surrounded him with all these weapons. They didn't want him throwing to Antonio Callaway as his number one. So guess what? They got Jarvis Landry last year. Put him in a comfortable spot. They go out and get two Pro Bowl running backs. I mean, that's what it is. They want him to be comfortable this year. It's hard to do that when you don't know where you're playing. And I know for a fact that's gotten to Jake Bowers. Now, he might not end up being a good player. But to find out, put him in the best spot for him to succeed. So I think that's first. I think Carlos Santana, 80% of the time, should be at DH. And then you have Luke Lowe.
What if you platoon those guys?
What
if you go 50-50? You go Bowers at first in the field 50% of the time. DH the other 50% of the time.
I think you could do
Carlos
that.
Carlos Santana at first the other 50, and then DH the other 50.
I think you could do that, especially to keep Carlos happy. I think that's part of it, too. And then you keep Bowers with his everyday at-bats.
And Jetsam, they've been throwing at DH. Guys that don't even have batting averages is a bleeping joke.
I don't think that Bowers' his future is even in the outfield. Like, look at their outfield. Mercado's part of the future.
Yeah.
I think Luplo very well might be part of the future. I know some people are down on him, et cetera. Looks pretty good to me. And defensively,
he's one of the few guys can actually hit the ball.
And defensively, he's pretty damn good. And then I look, Daniel Johnson in AAA. They obviously have Bradley Zimmer. They have outfield options. So to me,
they're just not very good.
You don't know that. Daniel Johnson could be good. He just got promoted from AA to AAA. Next, I'm talking long term here.
We're talking big picture. Long term. Gotcha.
But for this season, though, I think you stand pat right now and see where you're at a month from now, a month and a half from now, because getting Clevinger back matters.
Oh, yeah, it's too early to be selling.
Oh, anyway. Now it's too early. You were throwing dirt on them. They're done. They're not going to go anywhere. It's easy to say that.
Listen, I'm very confident that come the trade deadline, they're going to be about where they are now.
A week and a half ago, the Indians were 25-20 and on pace for 90 wins, and no one knew it. No one in the city knew it. And I get it doesn't look great, but they're 27-27. They're not much off of the pace from last year, the year before that. I get it. The Twins are great right now, and that's why you're feeling that way. But the Indians, not far from what they've been. So I'm not selling yet. I'm not selling. You bat down the hatches. You try to block things out. Here's the thing I am worried about, though, being in that clubhouse every single day. You want to know the guy I'm worried about getting frustrated?
Sure.
You're worried about all this stuff that you were there for 2 days, and now you're the expert anyways.
Listen, pal, I covered baseball.
Here we go.
I covered baseball in this town long before you were itching your daddy's underwear. All right.
I don't think that's true. I don't think you're that much older than me. Anyways, either way, maybe you are that old. I'll get you a cane. The guy I'm worried
about.
Oh,
we already have a cane man in town. That guy's a freaking legend.
You're right.
There's free food to be had. He's there.
The guy
mumbling to himself.
The guy I'm worried about being frustrated and kind of losing it is the best player on the team.
Lindor?
If I'm Francisco Lindor and I'm playing on an ankle that isn't 100%, right? There's the first thing. Rush back, and that's exactly what he did. Mm-hmm. And no one could. I get it. He was cleared. You could be cleared and not be 100%.
Dude, the Indians tweeted out a video of him. Actually, no, I take that back. It wasn't the Indians. I think it was the Columbus Clippers when he was on a rehab assignment.
Yeah.
He homered. And dude was limping around the bases.
Yeah, and he had that big brace on, and he still wears it. And he's going to tape it up and everything, and he's playing through that. And part of the plan, by the way,
can shut him down in July.
Was to DH him, right? He's only DH'd, I believe, twice, maybe three times. He's played shortstop for you almost every single day. Had a couple off days here and there, but mostly every single day. Here's the thing, though. He knows the Indians aren't going to pay him. He knows that he's not going to get the contract he desires from this Cleveland team, and yet he's given everything he can, and this is the product you're putting out on there on the field. These are the guys he's playing with. If I'm Francisco Lindor, at some point, and I talked to him about 10 days, 14 days ago, he didn't seem that frustrated. some point, he's going to get frustrated. And I think he's probably already there. They're obviously on the road. I'm not with the team right now. But that, to me, is the concern. Because if I'm Lindor, at some point, you start to look at things, I don't want to say selfishly, but for lack of a better term, selfishly, like, hey, I'm busting my ass. I'm playing on an ankle that isn't 100%. I'm doing everything I can for this team to win, including playing shortstop at a high level. And what are you surrounding me with? What are you giving me? Who's hitting in the two spot? I like Mercado in the two spot, by the way. But before that, who was it? Leonis Martin? Jason Kipnis? Please. It's ridiculous. So that's the guy to pay attention to as far as frustrations go. And to me,
I'm not worried about him.
If he hasn't got there yet, he will if they continue to lose. No, why would you not be worried? I'd be very worried.
I'm not worried about that. You want to know why?
Why?
Because, again, as I said, he's a transcendent player. I go back to 2007 when LeBron James carried this illustrious roster, Danielle Marshall, Damon Jones,
Booby Gibson,
Ira effing Newble.
Eric Snow was on that team.
Eric Snow.
An old Eric Snow.
Carried that group of very fine guys, but also basketball stiffs to the NBA Finals.
Varejao was on that team.
Zydrunas Ilgauskas was on that team. Z jumped into LeBron's arms after they beat the Pistons in Game 6. Was great. But he carried that group of stiffs to the NBA Finals, okay? Mm-hmm. He didn't sit there and say, look at all this crap around me. LeBron doesn't do that. And I don't think Francisco Lindor would do that either. Because, first of all,
does do that, but keep going.
Well,
he didn't then.
He was a young pup.
You're right.
Right. He was young and naive then.
That's right. That's right.
But, he carried the Cavs to the NBA Finals in 2018, too, and that was a pretty Cavs. That was the second worst team behind the 2007 team that he helped get to an NBA Final.
He ended the Pistons run.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So my point in mentioning that is that Francisco Lindor just doesn't I understand the human element, and I understand everything you said, and it makes total sense. But he just doesn't strike me as a kid that will allow that to consume him. Like,
You know how hard that is to do?
I understand, especially in that 162-game grind of everyday baseball. I totally get it. But that's just how special of a player I believe Francisco Lindor to be. And why I think the Cleveland Indians should break the bank.
Yeah,
to keep him.
If that's the case and he's that team oriented, that is.
Well, he obviously is team oriented. He came back on a 50% ankle.
Well, but that's what I'm saying.
And he's playing shortstop every day.
At some point.
And guess what? He's still performing at an all-star level.
He is.
And he's nowhere near 100%.
No, he is. He's been great. I mean, he's been great considering the circumstances. He certainly isn't anywhere near his ceiling.
Well, of course. I get it. I'm just saying, though.
By the way, his two-run double in the eighth got the Indians on the board yesterday and saved their season.
Considering everything that's going on, I don't think that he is going to be a guy that's going to say F it.
I don't think that.
When he goes home after a
bad night at the ballpark, does he freaking scream in his car or call his girlfriend or I know he doesn't, a girlfriend or whoever he confides in?
Woman
is
of
like,
the night.
What the? No, not someone like someone he really trusts, his best friend, calls him. I can't bleepin' believe this. Blah, 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 blah. Like, at some point, that will happen.
Here's what's going
to
happen.
You cannot continue to lay it all on the line for an organization that you know deep down is not going to pay you.
Here's the thing.
When you're
going to pay
him
the next
everything.
2 years, what's he making? 13 this year?
I don't think they're going to pay him the next 2 years. I think next year is the last year.
Okay, so you think
if they don't pay him, then
he goes to arbitration next year, right?
He's got two more years of arbitration.
Okay, so
sure,
and he's making 13 this year. Next year he's going to make
10.55 this year.
10.55. Okay, mm-hmm, so that means next year he's probably going to make between 13 and 15.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just guesstimating here.
Yeah.
Which the Indians would be willing to do, because again, Kipnis's 15 comes off the books, so now that's a wash. So they'll be they'll be plus 10. They'll have 10 million in the ledger there. They got a couple more guys that are going to come off the books, so they're going to have a little more flexibility and maneuverability financially this offseason than they did this past year. So for all the bitching and moaning, and deservedly so, that was done this year about payroll and them cutting payroll and all that, all those type of things. I think that this offseason they're going to have some flexibility so they don't have to take a stick of dynamite and completely blow up the organization right now. They don't need to do what the Baltimore or the Orioles are a horrific example.
No, they do not need to do that. They don't need to do like
they don't
any
need to do
teams.
What the Cincinnati Reds did a couple
no,
years ago.
No, they don't need to do what the Cubs did pre
you move
pre
you,
run.
You,
you know,
you move a piece like Bauer. You unfortunately Kluber broke his arm. People are saying trade Kluber. No one wants Kluber now. Kluber has no trade value. Okay, he doesn't. I'm sorry. That's just the cold hard math of that particular situation. I admit I was against trading him in the offseason. I was wrong. They should have traded him in the offseason.
In hindsight, sure, it's easy to say that after he gets injured.
But, well, no, I'm being fair and objective and honest about it.
But it's really easy to say it now.
I'm saying, though, I was one of the people that was on Twitter and on the air saying, whatever you do, you can't trade Corey Kluber.
I said it would take a ton. And they would have traded, by the way, they would have traded him if they got
a ton. Yeah, if they got what they were asking for.
Yeah, no team.
I understand that. But, you know, I'm just, you know, being fair and admitting I was wrong about one of my hot takes. That's all.
Gotcha. And real quick, one other thing about this offseason, because I don't want to hear that they can't operate within their means and still find like budget guys. Like they signed Cargo, right?
The reason in Cincinnati looks pretty freaking good.
Well, I was going to mention him. The reason they waited to sign Carlos Gonzalez.
See, after what, 17 home run? 17, hit three of them last night.
Yep. Carlos Gonzalez. They signed him, right?
Yep.
They signed him late in spring. Guess why they did that? Because he finally agreed to a minor league deal.
Right.
That's the problem.
Well, wait, isn't that what Dietrich signed in Cincinnati? It was like a minor league deal, but if he was in the bigs,
it might have been a minor league deal with Dietrich. I probably was, actually. But Adam Jones is the guy that comes to mind.
Yeah.
Adam Jones is the guy that was available who has 10 home runs right now and is hitting .274 and has gotten a nice glove, a nice addition for Arizona. Derek Dietrich, the other one you mentioned. You can still operate within your means. Can you imagine this infield now with Derek Dietrich? He'd be starting at second.
Yep.
Wouldn't even be close.
Kipnis could ride
the pine.
Wouldn't
be close. Ride the pine. Maybe you DFA. Like, seriously, maybe you just eat that money because Dietrich's such a bargain. Like, Dietrich's going to be an all-star if he continues to play like this.
He's not even on the ballot, I don't think.
But he's going to be.
I understand. You know but what I'm just saying, like, right now, like, he's not even on the ballot.
17 home runs has completely lit a fire in the thing. Goes St. Ignatius kit. Like, he would have loved to come here. I guarantee
you. Of course he would have.
And so, look, if you're going to sell like that and try to rebuild, fine. You got to get those veteran pieces right. So instead of Dietrich and Adam Jones, they sign Hanley Ramirez and Carlos Gonzalez. And I got to admit, I was a fan of the Cargo signing. I thought he had something left.
You wrote that he was going to be the savior.
Not savior, but I thought he was going to be successful. And I do think that there were things.
I believe the headline was.
He makes the Indians better.
He makes the Indians better.
Yeah, and honestly, he did. He won him a couple games with his glove. That alone. I'm dead serious. He made some catches in the outfield that, with their margin for error,
and
one right
games.
He's
made him better by not being here.
That's fair, too. you know, he hit a lot of ground balls. Hit a lot of ground balls. But the point is, you can still operate within your means and get the signings
right. Oh, absolutely.
Right.
And
they did it. And that's part of it, too. And that's what we're seeing.
And the Indians have been one of those teams for years that have been able to do that, where they have been able to find those diamonds in the rough. It's just, when you operate that way, when you're trying to find those value guys and those diamonds in the rough and, you know, the minor league deals with the spring training invites and, you know, your margin of error is just so incredibly slim.
Because
and
if you get it wrong, you feel it.
Right.
In most teams, most good teams
and
don't
again,
feel that if they take a swing and miss on Cargo.
And again, I go back to the Kipnis contract. At the time, like the front office got a standing ovation because it appeared to be a bargain. But now, 4 years down the road, you're looking at that contract and you're saying, holy crap, is this thing just weighing us down and hamstringing us from doing what we want to do or, you know, we need to do? And that's the point I'm trying to make about this front office. Yeah, you can be objective and critical of the front office. I don't think that they had an exceptionally good offseason, not by any stretch of the imagination. But also, being realistic about their margin of error, and when they make a mistake, they can't. It's very difficult for them to be able to correct it. Like if they make a mistake, it's usually one that it sinks the team, and that is, it's so. I get that they're paid to do a job over there. I understand, but it's so unfair to think about what they have. like their parameters, their operating parameters, and where they can afford to make mistakes, and that is nowhere.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because in baseball, it's impossible to get everybody right. The Boston Red Sox, okay, don't get everybody right, but they have the resources to put a Band-Aid over it.
Sure, I get that. I totally understand
the Indians, if they miss on a guy...
You can't get it wrong.
Right.
So there's a lot of pressure there, and I understand that.
Like,
here's what I would argue, though, is Derek Dietrich was mentioned among fans weeks before he signed. It was someone that was on the radar. And when it happened, it was like, why didn't the Indians do that? Like, that's the perfect Band-Aid. Speaking of Band-Aids.
I'm not saying that no one
expected him to do what he's doing now, but he was solid before that. He was a solid Major League Baseball player. Adam Jones. Are you kidding? The freaking Baskin and Phelps. Phelps was all over the Adam Jones train. They had a daily Adam Jones update. Like, it wasn't like these were under the radar. Like, I get it, diamond in the rough.
Oh, I get it.
But, like, there are also players that we knew.
Like I said, this front office did not have a good offseason.
The key is Adam Jones didn't want a minor league deal. He wanted a guaranteed deal, and I don't think the Indians were willing to reach out and give it to him.
And that's a damn shame
because that would have changed it. Derek Dietrich would have changed it. And instead now we're wondering if Jose Ramirez can be that guy.
Well, and you're hoping and praying that Jose Ramirez can
you're in trouble. Can you imagine if Derek Dietrich was in this lineup with 17 home runs?
Oh my gosh!
Let's say four less because of Great American Ballpark, because it's a hitter friendly park. Let's say it's 13.
Progressive Field's a hitter friendly park.
It's GABP is tiny though. So let's just say it's like 328 down one of them.
You won't see it this year because the Indians can't hit worth squat. But in the summertime, Progressive Field turns into a launching pad.
Gotcha.
In right center field?
Yeah.
Launching
pad. But let's just say 13 home runs.
Like Luke Logan.
He would lead the freaking Indians in home runs by a lot, by 3-4. It's ridiculous.
So I hopefully they can turn it around. I'm not optimistic. I think that they are what we've seen them to be. And they're a team that's going to tease us. They're going to win 4 of 5. But then they're going to lose 6 of 7.
Yeah, roller coaster. I agree with that.
I think they're a 500 team. That's what they're going to be. Trade deadline's going to come. They should sell. Not sell everybody. It's not a complete tear down and gut, but they're not going anywhere this year. They're not. I see it, and I don't see a spark within this team at all. They're just – and you know what? Maybe you're right. Maybe the win at Fenway, five runs in the ninth, that's season saving.
Those are the type of wins that do start that just, can be changing thing that can be season changing. Here's the problem with that. We've seen a couple of walk-off wins like that this year from the Indians. You know, Jose Ramirez hits the walk-off. Carlos Santana has a couple. And it still wasn't consistent. Yeah. Then the next day they lose 8-0, right? You know, it's been a roller coaster season. So.
And they've got a tough stretch coming. They got the Yankees. I think they got the Twins coming up here soon. Like it's just
those are the important games.
I mean, but they're in a
get some of those.
They're in a brutal stretch right now, and they had an 11-game homestand. They did not play well on, and you're supposed to play well at home. And I don't see them going on the road playing the best teams in baseball and getting hot. I don't see it. I'm being realistic. I think they're a 500 team going nowhere. And at the trade deadline, we're going to be looking for pieces that can help them win in 2020.
He's Darryl Ryder.
I think that's just where they are.
He's Darryl Ryder. I'm James Erpine. This is the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast. Up next, how important is it for the Browns to sign Gerald McCoy? Plus, Colin Cowherd and Baker Mayfield. The love affair continues.
Getting hooked.
We'll get to that next right here on the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome back into the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast. Daryl, let's dive right on into it. Gerald McCoy, what's the latest on him? He visited in Baltimore last night, had dinner with coaches.
Still visiting in Baltimore today.
Yeah, stayed overnight. But he stayed overnight here in Cleveland.
He did. The visit's going great in Baltimore. It went great in Cleveland.
Okay, so we don't know much past that. Here's what I will say. I've heard some say, and hell, by the time this is actually posted, he might have had a decision.
Hang on, let me check my phone, see if he signed.
But here's what I'll say. I've heard people say, oh, well, they don't need Gerald McCoy. They've got this guy, you know, the Sheldon Richardson. Obviously,
I think he'd be a luxury.
Yeah, and see, people are...
That's the approach I'm taking with it.
People are taking that approach, and here's what I'm going to say. If you want to beat Tom Brady in January, if you want to beat the Rams in the Super Bowl, if you want to beat Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh, if you want to beat the top teams on the fly like this, when a year ago we were talking about a winless team, mm-hmm. and now we're talking about playoffs and having these big aspirations with a first-year head coach, a second-year quarterback, you have to be the most talented team.
You have to be,
if the Browns are going to beat Tom Brady and the Patriots, they can't be slightly better talent-wise. They have to be much better talent-wise. The Rams on paper were much better than the Patriots talent-wise. And to me, it's not even close. But Belichick and Brady, they add for a lot. And when they're scheming against you for 2 weeks or even a week before you have to go to Foxborough or before they come here, guess what? It's going to be very tough in January to get that done. So, yes, I want him. I want any player of that magnitude, of that talent, especially a guy. It's not like he's been a distraction. Go get him because you're going to need him. To me, it makes sense. I'd pay him like $12 million for a year. $13 million for a year with some incentives.
I top it. I'd give him 2 years, 25, 18 guaranteed.
Oh, you get him.
And here's why I give him the 2 years.
See, because look at you.
In 2 years, then Miles is up, and sure. Then McCoy can walk. And you don't want to have Gerald here for 1 year, have this awesome defense, and then he walks after that year, and you're not going to be able to retain him. And also, the collective bargaining agreement's up in 2 years. You're getting 2 seasons.
Okay.
So that
I like that.
So I would
sign me up.
I would go John Dorsey if you're listening, which you're probably not.
Oh yeah, he is. He's a big listener of the Cleveland Sports Beat podcast.
I would go 2 years, $25 million. Get him in here. Put him in I agree with you, but at the same time, if you get him, great. If you don't. Here's why signing Gerald McCoy is important. Because, and I know this for a fact, they're not crazy about their linebackers, okay? If they could have blown all the linebackers out this offseason, they would have.
Sure.
Okay? They couldn't
do it. Hard to do that in one offseason.
Right. Okay? So, how do you compensate for not having the type of linebacking core that you want for Steve Wilks? Power up front.
Mm-hmm.
And speed behind you.
Yep, good on the back end.
And what has John Dorsey done this offseason? Power up front, speed on the back end, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And Gerald McCoy adds more power up front. And the other thing, too, is people have to understand, you're in base defense, and I think I'm even being generous when I say this, but you're about 25% of the time you're in base defense. That means one out of every four plays, if that, sometimes five, maybe six plays, you're actually in your base defense.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to rotate these guys in and out, your defensive line in and out, all the time.
Sure.
Okay. So I think it's important from the standpoint of if you're not crazy about your linebackers, this is how you compensate. The other thing, too, is you want to play keep away. You don't want him to end up in Baltimore with the Ravens because then you got to play him
twice this year. That's a huge deal.
Absolutely.
And the Ravens have had some success. I don't mean to cut you off. They've had some success at getting these veterans
right.
who have spent time in one place. Some names that come to mind. They got Steve Smith Sr.
Yep.
The Patriots wanted him. And he didn't even take a visit in New England, which Steve Smith, what are you thinking? But ended up having a really good career. Now, I would have went to New England right away from Carolina and went and got a ring or two. But, you know, Steve Smith, he did what he did. Eric Weddle comes to mind. Tony Jefferson, by the way, who the Browns wanted, comes to mind out of Arizona, right? They offered him more money, I believe, from what I heard. And obviously things are different now. That's part of it. I'd much rather not be going up against Gerald McCoy. I don't want Austin Corbett to have to deal with him.
Right. So don't. I think that's why this becomes so critically important. Now, if he ends up signing with Carolina, just I'm throwing a team out there. If he signs elsewhere outside the division, fine. God bless him. Hopefully that's what happens if he doesn't sign.
Imagine if he signs in New England.
Good for him. Well, how about the Patriots? They kept Danny Shelton. Yeah. I don't know what the hell that was about. I mean, I love Danny, but I don't love him that much. but yeah, so that's why the Gerald McCoy situation is so very important to watch right now. And the other thing too is his former position coach is a coach on the Ravens staff. Mm-hmm. So this is a relationship business, and that's why I give the edge to the Ravens.
Sure.
And the Ravens.
And here's the other thing is they do have the history of culture.
Right.
You know, they can
the
point
coach has
to,
been there. Hey. They kept Harbaugh, which I thought was a smart move. It had the Ravens parted ways with Harbaugh, he was like the first call I wanted the Browns to make.
In fact, I
wanted them to leave Baltimore with Harbaugh on the team charter back to Cleveland
for his
interview. Okay.
I agree with that. And you could have kept Freddie Kitchens as OC.
Right. So I'm a big Harbaugh fan. Jim, not John. I think that
Jim, not John. You mean John, not Jim.
Yeah.
There's yeah, I get it. It's easy to confuse them. I get it.
I think Gerald McCoy
on the Ravens, given how they want to play, which is this ground and pound, grind it out, great defense, 20-17 slugfest. That's tough to do, and it's tough to go, and I forget when they play at Baltimore, but let's say you see him in a wild card game. Let's say you see him the first weekend of the playoffs, and you have to deal with Gerald McCoy.
Yep.
I'd much rather, we talked about early in the podcast, comfortable. I'm more comfortable with Baker Mayfield not having to deal with Gerald McCoy and him being here in Cleveland.
Again.
So that's why I'd get it done. And the other thing is the talent thing. Like, to me, you have to be so much more talented than Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, and that's who you have to beat.
And
who you have to beat in January to win and get to where the Browns want
anywhere
to go.
But Baltimore. That's where we're at with Gerald McCoy. Sign anywhere but Baltimore.
I heard the Bengals are interested.
Yeah, okay.
You're so down on them.
Gerald also.
You are so down.
I am.
No, he's not going to go there. They'd have to pay him, and they're a lot like the Indians. Like, they're frugal. So there's no way they're paying him what he...
Wait a minute. I thought I read the other day, like a couple years ago, they were like top five in payroll 1 year.
Maybe 1 year, but they also had... It was all like homegrown talent that they can't... Like, they never go out and get the big free agent.
I know.
Couldn't tell you the last big free agent they've got.
Yeah, I'm not really paying the Bengals much attention this offseason, I confess. But yeah, so I would love it if the Browns could get McCoy. I think that he would really push that defense over the top. But I think that they're... Again, this is...
Do they have the best defensive line in the NFL if they get him? Olivier Vernon, Miles Garrett, Gerald McCoy, Sheldon Richardson. Who am I missing? I'm missing someone.
Olivier Vernon.
I said Olivier Vernon.
Did you?
I mean, those four. That's a big four.
Yeah.
McCoy, Richardson.
Ogunjobi would be.
Ogunjobi's. Yeah.
Right now, Ogunjobi's the starter. He would get bumped
if they give him.
I think this would be the fourth or fifth team since 1970, since the merger, with four Pro Bowlers on their defensive line.
Yeah, I was going to say, Richardson's a Pro Bowler, all of them are Pro.
Right, if that were to happen. So, I never like it when guys leave town. And here's what I can tell you about the visit in Berea. First of all, he met everybody. And I do mean he met everybody. He met the freaking janitor.
That's good.
Okay. He's doing the same thing in Baltimore, so it's...
No, it's good. It's good, though.
And
if you're the Browns, that's how you sell them on a different it's different than it has been. He played for a dysfunctional Tampa Bay. Best thing he wants to do is go to a dumpster fire.
And I can tell you they were very hopeful on Friday, as that visit was going on. There were some people in that building that were very hopeful that
it would just get done.
Something could get done before
Friday.
And it didn't happen. And everything that we've heard about the Cleveland visit, we've heard about the Baltimore visit. So that's why it's hard to handicap it right now as far as who has the advantage. Again, I give the advantage to Baltimore because of the relationships that he has with a member of that coaching staff. So if they get him, great. But if they don't, I don't think it's reason for Browns fan to panic. I don't think it takes away from their offseason by any stretch of the imagination. I think Larry Ogunjobi is a good player. I think he's an even better player because who he's been surrounded with. But this is the great spot that the Browns find themselves in now, that it's not life and death.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're all on pins and needles waiting to find out where this guy's going to sign, and everyone's hoping it's going to be here in Cleveland. But my point is it's not like years past where like it felt like the whole season hinges on what,
no, it, and
on,
it, and
on
it
what
doesn't,
this guy ultimately
it,
decides
it doesn't,
to do.
But I do think that if you want to be – not that they're not legitimate AFC North contenders or anything like that.
It is nice to think about a defensive line that would have Olivier Vernon, Sheldon Richardson, if you want to be Gerald McCoy, and Miles Garrett, rotate Larry Ogunjobi in and out.
Like,
oh, that's fun to think
if
about.
If you want to be – a legitimate Super Bowl contender, these are the signings you have to lock up.
I understand that.
You know what I'm saying? So to me, it is vital because people have high expectations, and I get it. Well, I think all of us have between 10 and 11 wins for the Browns. But if you want them to pass that step,
like,
and get
right
to that
now,
next step, these are the signings. And I love your two-year idea because keeping him around for 2 years makes all the difference in the world because he's a legitimate star still. They released him because the contract was 3 years.
Now,
they didn't want to do that.
Right, and here's the thing. The agent doesn't want to do 2 years, and here's why the agent doesn't want to do 2 years, because you want to reset your market value this year. Goes out, has a kick-ass season, let's say with the Browns.
I'd give him 1 year then. I'd still do 1 year.
I would do and you're not paying Larry Ogunjobi much, you're not paying Miles Garrett much yet. You are paying Olivier Vernon $15 million. You're paying Sheldon Richardson, I think it's 11 or 12.
I'm going to say 11 or 12, yeah.
It's in the 11 to 12 ballpark. So if you add a third player.
Yeah, I think it was 3 years, $36 million for Sheldon.
So if you add a third player to your defensive line that you're paying $10-plus million to.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be something like the analytics wing of the Browns front office. It'll like Paul DiPodesta, that's going to drive him bat bleep crazy when he sees that, because the whole there's like formulas you have. It's like,
sure.
For instance,
you want to allocate so much money to this position group and this position.
For instance,
group and this
they traded out Kevin Zeitler's salary. Mm-hmm. For Olivier Vernon.
Know
what I'm saying?
Well, and here's
they
the other thing. They're already spending a lot on wide receiver.
Right.
You know, they're spending over $35 million on two wide receivers.
Right. So, but I would try and get him for the 2 years. I don't think the agent's going to go for 2 years. I think the agent wants to do 1 year, go in, have a kick-ass year, hit free agency again next year. Obviously, there's a risk of injury.
But if I'm the Browns, I'm okay.
Right.
with that. Maybe not preferred.
Maybe
but,
you go.
But if it's Gerald McCoy, 1 year, 15, or no Gerald McCoy, or he ends up in Baltimore, I want him here.
You know, Ndamukong Suh got
10.
Well, he got 9.5 with $500,000 in incentives. Okay,
gotcha.
And I was told that Gerald would want more than that.
Sure.
So I would go.
He's better than Suh.
So I would go, and he lost out on 13. Last year this coming year with the Buccaneers. He was scheduled to make 13. So I would go 1 year, $11 million, and give him an extra million in incentives and make the incentives reasonable. Okay?
Yeah, but if it gets to a bidding, like, they have the room, especially in a 1 year
deal.
Well,
so do the Ravens. The Ravens have have about $15 million in cap space, too, so they have the room.
But that's what I'm saying is
they would
if you
have
to go up to 15 with incentives, fine. Like, it really it doesn't. What is it if it's 1 year?
Right.
What does it really hurt? Like, you're just bringing him on now. So that to me makes sense.
Yeah, the thing that concerns me is when I look at the big picture, okay, and let's say you bring him in for the 1 year and then he walks away.
Okay.
Okay. And let's say you win the division, you make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Flip a coin if they won a playoff game or whatever.
Okay.
Was that worth that? Was that worth, from an analytical standpoint, not from a emotional standpoint,
mm-hmm.
from an analytical standpoint, was that worth the, let's say, I'll just say, let's say $12 million. Was that worth the $12
sure.
million expenditure? Now, hang on.
I would say
was
yes, because he probably helped get you there. He's still a game changer.
I understand that. My point is, though, is now I go into 2020 and I now have a bit of a void that I have to fill.
Well, you still have Larry Ogunjobi.
All right. Fair enough.
You know, I mean, worst case, and you have a draft, and you have free agency, and you have, you know, there's just a lot. I get what you're saying.
I'm not playing devil's advocate. I'm doing what the Browns front office does.
Sure, and Gerald McCoy isn't a long-term solution anyway. Like, most is 2 years.
This is how you talk through these situations. And this is what goes on the second floor of all these buildings around the NFL when you're talking a signing of this magnitude. These are the things that John Dorsey we'll be talking about with Alonzo Highsmith and Elliot Wolf and Paul DePodesta. And these are the things that come up because not only do they look at the 2019 season, they're looking at 2020. They're looking at 2021.
Sure.
But I think the Browns window right now is 2 years. It can be longer. The reason I'm saying 2 years is because that's what's guaranteed in front of us. Then the CBA expires. And who the hell knows what's going to happen with that? You've got 1 minute, these reports coming out that talks between the union and the league are going great. And then the next day, a letter's being sent to the players telling them to save every penny they can and anticipate a work stoppage for a full year.
I think it'll be
fine. I do too. I think it's going to be similar to I could see you're a week or two late getting into training camp. I think the NFLPA should advise
its players to do that because that should happen. You know,
To me, life is too good for the National Football League right now. And for everybody involved.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I realize that in some aspects the owners have the better end of the CBA and the players' unions trying to close that gap a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be dangerous for the league because who knows what the economy's gonna be like in 2 years as well. Because fans don't care about the millionaires and the billionaires. They just want their football in the fall and on Sundays and Thursday nights and Monday nights and Sunday nights. So, but again, I'm operating in a 2 year window right now just because that X factor. And the other thing too is I don't know what the terms of that CBA are going to be.
Could change everything.
Right. I don't know what the salary cap's going to look like. Are they going to keep the rollover provision? There's so many variables that are working against me right now as an NFL GM. So if I'm John Dorsey, I'm playing for 2019 and 2020. I'm all in on those. You're all in every year. I understand that.
No, but
you're already seeing it.
Yeah, he's definitely in right now.
You're all in.
And you can start to move on from some of these guys after those 2 years.
And again, I have no problem paying Gerald McCoy whatever it takes to get him in here. I'm also looking at it from the analytical standpoint of, you know, the salary, the dollars, you know, how much does it make sense for a guy that you're renting for 1 year and all those type of things, team building. You know, and here's the other thing you got to think about, James, is with McCoy, is it he comes in for a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if Larry Ogunjobi's a Pro Bowl prospect. I think he's a solid player.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think he's transcendent. I don't think he's elite, but I think he can play at a level that's acceptable for having three Pro Bowlers around him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like, I don't think he's going to be the Achilles heel.
No. He'll be fine. He'll be serviceable.
Right. So now, here's the other thing that I'll throw at you. Is it, for that 1 year and $12 million, is it worth me taking snaps away from Larry Ogunjobi to bring in Gerald McCoy for 1 year? Or, because I have those three Pro Bowlers around Larry, is it more advantageous from a big picture multi-year team building standpoint that Larry Ogunjobi gets more of those snaps?
It's easy to say that, and I get what you're doing. The thing
again,
I think though
these are things that John Dorsey and the company talk about.
Absolutely. But here's a couple things on that. One, depth on the defensive line, there will be injuries.
Absolutely, there will be, yeah.
There's going to be rotations. Yep. A ton, like you said at the top.
And the more rotation, the less chance you will have an injury.
Yeah.
That's significant.
Correct. So to me, you can still balance that.
Yep.
And it's that simple.
Like I said, I'm not trying to talk people out of this.
Yeah.
I'm just raising things that they will talk about as they go through this process. Again, I'm all in on Gerald McCoy. Whatever it takes, sign him, get him in here, whatever. I'm just bringing up issues.
Well, and it's not just you. There are some people that and I've heard callers on 92.3 The Fan. They don't need him. Don't let him go. And I'm not of that mindset. Real quick, we got to get out of here. Real quick, though, 60 seconds, 2 minutes, whatever. This Colin Cowherd, Baker Mayfield thing. What are your thoughts on it?
First of all, I think it's all staged. I think it's showbiz.
Still, you still think it is?
I think that there's showbiz aspect to it.
An aspect, sure.
Okay, I, Colin's getting what he wants. He knows every time he bags on Baker that he's going to get a response from Baker, and he's going to get a response from Browns fan, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's Colin's job.
Sure.
Colin's job is to have an opinion, to have a hot take that's going to generate a reaction, positive or negative.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Skip Clueless on the Four Letter Network and Screamin' A and all those guys. They're doing their jobs. Now, I don't agree with half their hot takes, but that's their job, is to have a hot take. Whether it's right or not is immaterial. Whether it's well-founded or well thought out, and as we know with some of these hot takes, they're not very well thought out, but that's their job, to elicit that reaction and get people engaged, okay? Mm-hmm. Baker's using it. Colin's helping. I think it's great for the Browns and for Baker, because all Colin is doing is that little chip that's on Baker's shoulder. Every time Colin says Baker's reminds everyone that he thought Baker was undraftable, that chip on the shoulder just gets bigger and bigger.
You really
and bigger.
Think that continues to motivate him? Colin Cowherd says, well, like, if Colin Cowherd came out and said I was trash, and I like to use things as motivation, but I would just be like, okay, Colin. Like, well, I don't know. Does that really make his chip bigger?
And I think that Baker, too, like, Baker's now selling the T-shirts. I think that's...
Baker's got some star and diva to him.
Right.
I think that's the bottom line. And because he's in Cleveland, let's call it like it is. Because Baker Mayfield's in Cleveland, he's loved. If he was anywhere else, you would hate him just like everyone else. He's easily hateable.
Baker's hateable?
Are you serious? He's totally willing... Yeah. You think that people in other cities... Like Baker Mayfield? You think if he throws 6 touchdown passes against Pittsburgh, there won't be all these Baker Mayfield haters? He hasn't arrived there yet, but he's totally okay with being the villain. And when you're okay with being the villain, you're absolutely hateable. He's Philip Rivers.
And you know what? And
players hate playing against Philip Rivers, love playing with him. He is Philip Rivers. Yeah, he might be better than Philip Rivers one day, but that's what I'm saying.
And my point is,
he's definitely hateable.
I think it's perfectly fine.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, for outside looking in, it's easy to hate Baker.
I like that Baker's comfortable. Like, he's okay. Like, he's not... I don't think Baker's as bothered by the stuff that Colin Cowherd says as he, like, puts it out there that he is, if that makes sense. Like, you were saying about the chip.
I don't think he gets pissed off and throws, you know... a ball through a window.
He just gives a middle finger to the TV and that's it.
Yeah.
Or his Twitter feed.
Well, he sees it on Twitter and he's not afraid. And I think what really offended him, and this is why I don't think it's all for show, the OBJ stuff, when Odell Beckham Jr. was actually bothered by what Colin said, when he did like the 10...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The family, 10 moments.
The family feud, which I still have a screen grab of.
Yeah, the 10 moments.
The trade to the Browns was the number... By the way, Colin, when you're going to do bits, make sure you do them like correctly. When you're doing a Family Feud style bit, you count from 10 to 1. You don't start at 1 and then go down the board. You save the most important...
Did he start at 1? Interesting.
He started at 1 because he's an idiot. But yeah, the top... Here it is. The top 10 moments of... Memorable moments of OBJ's career.
And here's the thing with this. He's pretty much not wrong.
No.
Of course not. And here's the thing. People get pissed off. But Baker Mayfield said it in his response.
Some of these are funny.
He was like, he's only 26. His story has yet to be told. And that's the reality. And when you talk about chips, I need Odell Beckham Jr. to have a chip. Because the reality is, OBJ is nothing but a guy who's a star for a lot of reasons, who's put up some big numbers and hasn't won a damn thing. And that can change in Cleveland. And that's the difference, if he can use that for motivation.
Here's the thing about there's some funny stuff here. The commercial with Eli. The fight with the net, proposing to the net, being traded to the Browns.
There's some comedic value there. Because Odell Beckham Jr. hasn't done enough to reach his full potential in this league. And I think that's what that says. And I think Colin's accurate there.
Yeah, I just think that this whole thing is part of its show business. It wouldn't shock me that it probably won't be this summer because Baker's going to get married and he's going to be a little busy. But it would not shock me to see Baker back on Colin's show anytime soon. And this is the formula, okay? Here's the formula, James. Formula is, I'm going to say something outrageous, outlandish that's going to piss you off, okay? Mm-hmm. Then you're going to react to me and tell me what a POS I am, Okay. Then I'm going to invite you to come on my show so we can talk about it and debate it. That's the three-step hot take showbiz formula that's out there today.
Sure.
And we all win because I get people engaging with me, you get people engaging with you, and then when you come on the show, everybody's going to be watching and listening and yada yada. Okay. So that's all it is. So I don't have any problem. I have no problem with Baker reacting to it. Collins doing what Collins supposed to do. That's what he's paid millions of dollars a year for. And I find it, quite frankly, amusing. I really do. I find the whole situation amusing. I think it'll help Baker a little bit because it just adds fuel to that fire. I'm not saying it is the chip on his shoulder, but like to your point about being hateable and all that, I think Baker embraces being
he
that
does.
Guy.
No he, doubt. He does. That's
what drives him. What drives him is when people say he can't play or he's not good enough, because then his goal is to show you that I'm good enough. If that, you know what I mean?
Brady has that same thing. Brady loves boost.
Right.
LeBron didn't have that early in his career right away.
He didn't know how to react in 2010 when he was the villain with the Miami Heat.
It was tough for him. Right. And you saw it in the finals.
It ate away.
Now he can be the villain.
And then in 2011, he's like, F it. I'm just going to embrace it. Y'all hate me? Fine. I'm just going to go out and do my thing and win championships. And that's what he did the next couple
years. I like that. I like that.
Right.
LeBron sounder.
And so that's.
I'm going to do my thing.
That's where Baker is at too.
Yeah.
He loves that.
Well, some are born with it. Some you have to learn it, and he has that.
Yeah,
and I think OBJ. I don't think he has it. I think OBJ likes being liked.
OBJ wants to be liked. He wants to be loved. He loves talking to his phone. He loves being that social media
but
showman.
He can get there. So it'll be interesting to see.
I don't think so. I think Odell is a lot more sensitive to the outside noise than Baker is. Like, whereas Baker's aware of everything, Baker's aware of everyone that covers the team, what they say, what they've written, and whatever, okay? And to a degree, he does hold it against people, still does. If you listen to his press conferences, people know what I'm referencing.
Sure.
Odell, I think, does the same thing. Where Baker will just slough it off, right? He'll have some fun in the press conference or whatever, but otherwise he's walking away like, F those guys, I'm good.
Yeah, but
whereas Odell, I think Odell takes it a little. And again, I say this, I haven't been around Odell enough. This is just my perception, okay? My opinion is shaped by my perception of the guy so far. Odell strikes me as a guy, like you said, that wants to be loved. And when he's not loved, I think that hurts him a little bit, and we saw a little bit of that of him in New York when he was with the Giants.
Sure, we did, but we just said LeBron learned it. And what I think is when Baker Mayfield's your leader and he already has that quality, guess who can learn it from him? Odell Beckham.
I think
that is a transferable trait to a degree. Is he going to be able to embrace it and be Darth Vader all the time? No, Baker Mayfield can be Darth Vader every single minute of every single day. In Foxborough, fist pump, the plant the flag at Ohio State at the stadium. That's what he does. That's him. He's not afraid of that. So I do think that he can help with the sensitivity a little bit. I do. I do think that that's there. So it'll be interesting. I do think it'll be fun to see what.
I hope no one ever helps you with your sensitivity. You're sensitive enough.
That's right. What Colin Cowherd says if the Browns sign Gerald McCoy. Because you can't knock that one. You can't knock in the trenches. So, all right, we got to get out of here. This is an extra long podcast. We had only done one this month. We had to talk to you, catch up with all the listeners. We got to call this the CSB, by the way. The Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast. We got to do CSB. It takes a while for me to say. If I could just say here on the CSB, it'd be much easier. So I'm going to start calling it that. What do you think, Daryl?
Fine by me.
Make sure you subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, the radio.com app, and our website, 923thefan.com. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes so more Cleveland sports fans can find this podcast.
We gave you a 2-for-1 today.
We'll be back next week.
We basically gave you an Indians podcast, and we gave you a Browns podcast.
Yeah, we did.
And we did a 2-for-1, so I think we made good for
and we're going to be back next week. So, boom. No more weeks off. No more weeks off.
Until you get married. And go on your honeymoon.
We'll figure that out. He's Daryl Ryder. I'm James Erpine. Thank you so much for listening to the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better.
because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.